Necessarily those of WWPR Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
But our message to anyone who harms our people is simple. America does not forget. Our reach is long. Our patient justice will be done. We have proved time and time again we will do what's necessary to capture those who harm Americans. And let me say it again. American combat troops will not be returning to fight in Iraq, will not allow the United States to be dragged back into another ground war in Iraq.
Congressman Vernon Buchanan is a leader in fighting.
Good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'm Henry Riggs. Here's Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Well, it's Election Day. Oh, no, that was yesterday. And are you happy? Did you vote? Are you one of the 40 or so percent of voters who turned out in this
40?
Election? Is it that high?
14.
It became 14. Wow.
In Manatee County.
Well, the prediction in Sarasota was going to be about 40. I've been looking and looking to how it was. And having voted there and the troubles you have to go through with this electronic voting signature that you have to do in all 10 minutes, there was no line at my precinct, but I said to them, I says, this you call efficiency, electronic voting, and you have to sign in and you use a signature that you can't even begin to read your own. This is a joke. And typical of Sarasota County, and I think probably so of Manatee, the discouragement of voters who are apt or as opposed to inept is complete. And now we're going to see the 14% turnout in Manatee. It'll probably be similar in Sarasota. The developers have won, with a slight exception in the school board. A Democrat got in there. A second Democrat got into the school board.
Yeah, but how much does that affect the developers?
Not one little bit. And, of course, at-large elections are the culprit here. Also, party voting, primary voting, things like that. That is the other culprit. And we get rid of party voting and have no party open primaries, then you have a different system. But we're not going to go anywhere in this country, in these localities, in these regions, unless we make those kinds of changes, Henry. But we have a guest coming up later in the show, but it leads into the whole idea of what's happening with the Republican governors. And we have Chris Christie up there, which we'll be discussing later. But we have Mr. Perry down in Texas. We have Scott Walker, who's having some rumblings and some problems in Wisconsin. We have McDonald out in Virginia being nailed to the wall in a grand jury indictment. All these different people with their problems, the bumbling of governors that have been in place. And, of course, we have our own wonderful scot-free governor. Who has an interesting history of his own. So if he fails in this election, this governor of the state of Florida, along with these other people running into trouble, the power of the states is going to shift pretty radically. I think there's about 30-some governorships that are Republican today, and I don't think you have the exact number, but that number may shift quite a bit, and that makes a difference in elections, in the off-year elections especially. But with the way they're running them, the supervisor of elections running them in Sarasota County, what kind of system do you have up here, Henry?
What kind of system?
Well, when you go in and vote, do you vote?
It's a bubble in. It's an optical scanner.
Right, no, but I mean, when you sign up, when you go to register.
I handed my driver's license.
And then you did what?
They scan it. They swipe it just like they would at 7-Eleven.
Right.
And then you sign in on one of those electronic sign-in
right.
things. And
it took
and they act like they're looking at it, like they can tell the difference between what is signed on my driver's license. And maybe there's even I don't see their screen. They may even have an image of what my signature looks like at the voter registration office.
Well, there's no way on God's green earth is that signature going to remain consistent with that kind of a signature put on.
So you're saying we do need driver's license?
Well, what we need, I think, are a copy of a, I don't know how you signature is anything except that on absentee ballots they scrutinize and give conditional ballots out to people when they suspect that the person's signature doesn't match up. And in my case, and some other people's who were voting at the same time, it took 10 full minutes. I timed it 10 minutes to get registered in to vote.
No, it wasn't anything like that. It was fast.
It was fast.
Yeah. It was about as fast as it takes you to hand your credit card somewhere and then sign your electronic
receipt. You have an efficient system up in Manatee.
It wasn't strained yesterday, that's for sure. But before we have to make arrangements to get our guest on, more importantly, Augie, than what happened in the election yesterday, is what people are saying about us. And by that, I mean on the podcast site, we had a couple comments up from the last couple shows, and we encourage you to place your comments on themorningedge.podomatic.com. That's one of the several things that the algorithm that rates us and keeps us recently in the top four, five consistently on podomatic.com for liberal and progressive shows is that's one of the things. So we appreciate it when people put their comments up. They happen to be about Ferguson and Michael Brown. This is first as a follow-up comment, replying directly to you, sir.
Oh, okay.
This is Robert. He had commented on the podcast site a couple days ago. We read that, and then you commented. He didn't seem to care about anything I said about him, but he certainly said, from Robert, replying to a comment by
Augie.
I'm putting my own intonation in this because I can't really tell what
he has an English accent because he's from England. I say, oh boy.
Ah. Well, I don't know. Wouldn't the shoot to kill become qualifiable? I don't believe that the officer involved intended to kill Mr. Brown. I think he was just defending himself against a vicious attacker. Frankly, to have shot him 6 times is not a good example. Why not shoot him in the legs, which would have immobilized him immediately? I think I have an Ethiopian British accent going on here or something. I didn't know Robert was Ethiopian. The level of violence in Ferguson by the black community is unacceptable, particularly against shop owners, video available. Since when has Ferguson become the planet I have to disclaim this next comment. Robert, I don't know what was in your mind when you put this sentence in here. I'm just reading it. I disavow it. Since when has Ferguson become Planet of the Apes? Police officers in this area need better training in physical contact. South of the border, nobody in their right mind would attack a policeman with a gun, whatever the color of their skin. You will be killed. Planet of the Apes, Augie.
There's an inference. Robert has that
That British racial thing going?
British racial thing, for sure. yeah, well...
Or maybe he's just a big fan of the movies.
Now they've come up with 3 more shots that they've determined a total of 10 shots.
If that latest audio is...
Right, up to 10.
Yeah,
it means he emptied his clip. And that's why some people said there were bullets spraying everywhere. Mm-hmm. But the interesting bullet that went to the top of the head, the top of the skull, to me was an execution shot. And justice on the streets and the part of the police or anyone else is not justice at all.
6 shots and then a pause.
Right.
And then 4 more shots.
Yeah, so you don't know, did the last shot happen in the top of the skull? The argument that he was being lunged at, there were 2 shots to the head, one at the top of the skull as supposedly the killing shot, and the other shots running up the right side of the body. If we want our police to execute people on the street, why have a jury system? Why bother with any of that? They can just do it
all. Save money.
Yeah, it saves a lot of time.
Judge Dredd, you ever see that movie?
Pardon me?
Judge Dredd, you ever see that movie? It started out as a British comic book. Maybe Robert read the British comic book. Is he a comic book kind
of
guy?
You know, I really don't know that side of it.
Robert,
by the way, is quite a singer. He was in Hollywood for a short time doing films when he was younger. He's a very wonderful singer, but his judgment on the racial side, I'm afraid, is a little skewed.
Well, anyway, Robert, if you check your Judge Dredd comics from Great Britain.
Judge Dredd,
Dredd was judge, jury, and executioner in future Great Britain.
Yeah.
It's a very efficient system. Anyway, we also had a comment.
He was
from
a hanging judge, was he? Or just hanging around?
He had a gun.
He had the gun.
He didn't need to hang.
He didn't need to hang anybody.
Rode a big motorcycle and administered justice. And there's a Sylvester Stallone movie made about it.
Oh, okay.
Bombed. The other comment is from Wade. We do know that Bullying Brown left the store with a feeling of satisfaction at having shoved and cuffed the little store owner. I love Wade's alliteration, Bullying Brown. This is not a poor little college-bound goody boy bound for college that everyone seems to portray. Only once have I seen the diminutive store owner interviewed, and when the reporter asked if he would keep his store open, he replied that he was not sure he could. And I wonder who is concerned about this little guy's safety. I do agree that kneecapping would probably have been a better choice by the policeman. But then again, I was not being approached by a big guy with an attitude displayed minutes before as he left the store. Not an innocent young college-bound youth that should be acknowledged by everyone from Attorney General on down the line to Chris Hayes and other media luminaries. I did not march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge behind Martin Luther King in 1965 in support of behavior like Michael Brown displayed on camera.
Yeah, Wade, you have the point of behavior as previous to the incident, sure. But again, killing people for their behavior in one situation is one thing. Killing for behavior in the other, is that expected? Is that what you say you believe happened or you surmise happened? There's also the story running around that the money for the cigars was on the countertop. And the argument was perhaps about not the money in toto, but about the tax not being paid or some other such possibility. So maybe this boy was not so bullying after all. Maybe he was just irritated. He was being bothered. But I agree with you. He looked extremely intimidating when he pushed up against the clerk. And that does make it something kind of a sad situation. Down in Texas, we have an indictment. Do you believe in indictments? The indictment returned by a grand jury in Travis County just over a week ago stems from Mr. Perry's efforts to force the resignation of the county's district attorney, Rosemary Lemberg, after she was arrested on drunken driving charges in April of 2013. Mr. Perry is also charged with threatening to veto funding for the office's operation. And this is anti-corruption unit that she was part of, unless she quit her job, a threat he ultimately carried out with a veto that blocked $7.5 million in state monies. The special prosecutor, Mr. McCrum, is expected to respond to the motion before a Friday deadline. Mr. McCrum, M-C-C-R-U-M, a San Antonio attorney, told reporters that he would review the defense motion and prepare a written response. And that, if the court calls for a hearing, I will appear in court, argue on behalf of the people of the state of Texas. So when these people get into trouble, like McDonald in Virginia, who's now being hammered by the prosecutor in Virginia over $150,000 of monies and benefits and goodies that he and his wife received, that he's shoving the blame off onto his wife for, is kind of a curious thing. And the possible indictment of Chris Christie is always looming in the background, which we will be discussing later. Escaping Bridgegate, is he escaping? Is he going to then run for president after all and seemingly escape? He put a stop to the big dig. A benefit to the community between New York and New Jersey. This man who we are impressed with his brusque forthrightness, as we like to call it, and actually, I thought, insulting, humiliating, demeaning behavior of some people who ask legitimate questions that he didn't care for. And then, of course, Scott Walker out of Wisconsin, who is flirting with trouble over similar kinds of corruption charges that are starting to smell up the atmosphere in Wisconsin. So here we have several governors in trouble in the country, and the governorships in the dominant control of Republicans might just be a political plus for the Democrats as time wears on. So, do we have a caller, Henry?
We have Lawrence. Good morning, Lawrence.
Good morning, Lawrence.
We only have a minute or two.
Yeah, Lawrence.
Which will be plenty.
Lawrence, you're on the air.
Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Good morning.
Good morning, Lawrence.
Why are you only talking about Republicans?
Well, they're the most interesting thing to talk about right now.
Really?
Which indicted Democratic governor would you like us to talk about?
The New York Times did not endorse the governor of New York.
Cuomo, sure. No, they're very much against him, actually. You're right.
What is he, a Republican?
No, he's a Democrat.
So why aren't you a little bit fair as opposed to so ridiculously biased?
Well, so far Cuomo has not been indicted for anything. I think that makes a difference, Lawrence.
Besides Perry, who has not been indicted.
No, I'm sorry, you're wrong. He has
been. Oh, no, he has been indicted, but not convicted of anything. Who else has been indicted?
Governor
McDonald in Wisconsin.
Is he a current...
We don't have time for this. We got a guest in 4 minutes.
I know. He quibbles instead of having the conversation, unfortunately.
We haven't reviewed any of the election results. We need to quickly...
No, we need to do that, yeah.
Of course, Charlie Crist... defeating Nan Rich in the Democratic primary. Not a surprise, but I think some people might be surprised by the margin of victory.
I think that was important. He won like 75-25, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and the upper predictions were of 40%.
For Nan Rich.
Margin, so he did better
than
that.
Well, Nan Rich represented a real possible threat. If you recall the election when Janet Reno ran in South Florida, she lost a significant portion of votes down in Miami-Dade, and that's how Bill McBride got in and became the candidate against Bush, a much easier candidate than Janet Reno would have been for Jeb Bush. So, and there was a real suspicion that in South and Miami-Dade that the election was rigged, the votes were lost for Reno, and she had therefore lost the primary. And Nan Rich had the potential to do that to Crist. So, for some reason or other, the system has righted itself to the extent that there seems to be a consistency between the voter interest and support and the outcome of the election. So,
well, and then in the in the attorney general race on the Democratic side, Mr. Sheldon won against Perry Thurston. Neither candidate had money to buy TV ads. And did you have a pick in that one?
I chose Thurston reluctantly, but I had listened to Sheldon speak, and he was pretty impressive, but he had stayed back out of the woodwork. He's got a big resume. I chose Thurston because he was black primarily, and that I felt we need some kind of public concern from the minority communities, and that's why I made that choice. I had no problem with Sheldon winning it. But I think the interesting...
Worked in the Obama administration.
Pardon me?
He worked in the Obama administration.
There you go. So the long and the short of it, we've had some down in Sarasota County. The positives are on the county commission aren't positives, I would say, when the developers won the election, essentially. Mile and Cara Giulio are the big representatives of the moneyed interests. We have at-large elections down in Sarasota County, which is a one-party system. Of course, Lawrence probably likes one-party systems because he might move to Sarasota and have his wish. But in the case of the school board, two Democrats are now sitting on the commission, and one who is a pseudo-Republican or a rhino in Jane Goodwin, is also sitting there. And so the direction of the school board in Sarasota County is one that I think is on the positive side of things, and all of the Common Core and things like that, and international standards, which is what Common Core is really about. So kids, when they finish the school system in Florida, have some idea what's happening in the world, not just in their locality.
Well, the developers definitely won in Manatee County, in the county commission race, District 2. First of all, District 4, the incumbent Robin DiSabatino beat Tim Norwood, who I believe this is a second running of Mr. Norwood for elected office in Manatee County, and a second defeat. Robin DiSabatino, although she comes from the real estate industry, has been noted as not a rubber stamp for the developers, and in fact, to the dismay of many of the developers, but she won by 2-1 in that election. But in Manatee County Commission District 2, the Democratic primary, this is one of those that we discussed Monday with Dennis Maley, where there was a write-in candidate on the Republican side in order to close the primary off and have only, you know, Democrats vote in a predominantly black district. Michael Gallen faced two African-American candidates, Corey Holmes and Charles Smith. And, of course, the last time he ran, it was an open primary because there wasn't a Republican candidate, and he won handily over the incumbent, Gwen Brown. But as of this time, it is going into a recount. Charles Smith is 5 votes ahead of Michael Gallen. So you have to say that the closing of that primary definitely affected the election outcome in this case. Michael Gallen with 1,024 votes, Charles Smith with 1,029, the third candidate, Corey Holmes, 884. Commissioner Gallen was billed as a do-nothing commissioner and was tried to be blamed by his opponents for the high unemployment rate in his district.
We've always known that if the county commissioners had anything wrong with them and the unemployment was too high, it would be their fault.
Yes, especially in a single-member district that
right.
Has very little jobs
and
in
to
it.
To your virtue here, you do have 5 out of 7 districts which are single-member. Therefore, the people have a direct contact with their commissioner and representation, unlike Sarasota County.
Well, I regrettably feel the Morning Edge is directly responsible for the election results because of our influence.
No question.
Michael Gallen had been on the show when it was an open election, or rather been on the 1490 when he ran previously 4 years ago, and won. And because it was a single-member district and a primary, I didn't go out of my way to book him on the show, but I'm sure we would have swung 5, 6, 7, 8 votes his way changed the course of Manatee County's history. But Michael Gallen was instrumental in getting the school districts to open up playgrounds again to the general public, which may not seem like a big deal, but that used to be common.
I think that's a beautiful thing to do, and unfortunately that didn't benefit him.
And he was another very loud voice against development, against unwise development in the county. So
you have Baruff and Benderson, the Baruff up here in Manatee County and Benderson in Sarasota and in Manatee County, benefiting from the outcome of these elections. And you people who complain about the traffic and all the problems of overdevelopment and the impact fees that are missing and all these kind of things that are going to benefit these big money interests who have increasing power over your county commissions, this is the result when you don't vote, and this is what's happening.
And Channel 7 last night very blatantly mistakenly said that this, because of the margin, it was going to go to a runoff, and that is not the current way we do things in Manatee County. And then also, finally, in the last two races in Manatee County, the school board, Frank Bruner defeated handily by Karen Carpenter, almost 2-1. Frank Bruner was a previous school board member who was trying to run as new leadership, which is sort of ironic because Karen Carpenter came in as opposition to the old leadership. Julie Aranabar has 37.1% of the votes. Mary Cantrell, 35.3%. James Golden and Carlton Nichols trailing behind. Now, I believe, according to Dennis Maley, this will go to a runoff in what can only be imagined as a handful of voters coming out for a special election. And no, this will actually go to the general election, so there'll be a decent turnout for this one.
There was an interesting circuit judge over the 12th Judicial District. Malucci defeated Jackman, and I listened to both of them speak. She was a former magistrate in Manatee County. She defeated Assistant State Attorney Art Jackman on Tuesday in the primary election. The 12th Circuit Judge position was left vacant by the retirement of Judge Mark Gilnett. Judicial races are somewhat rare, but with judges often retiring midterm and a replacement being appointed by the governor. Because judicial races are nonpartisan and candidates are not allowed to discuss specific issues, they run solely on their experience and other attributes. Malucci touted her diverse career of working as a prosecutor, running her own law firm and overseeing family law and child support proceedings. She resigned from her magistrate position in which she was appointed in 2004 to campaign. She founded Next Step, a program for teenagers who are aging out of foster care. Being a judge has been a long time of Malucci. I'm the only one with bench experience. I've done many of the same tasks performed by the circuit judge, and I performed well. I believe that I've got a reputation as being fair and well prepared. I was impressed with her in that she seemed human, which is what I want a judge to be. I don't give a blasted damn how many credits you have behind you in terms of degree, pedigree, and so forth, which is what Jackman had, a pile. Came out of Notre Dame, did a lot of things of that sort, and he presented himself to the veterans group that I sat with last week. And I listened to, and he was bloodless as far as I was concerned. And I asked him why he got the endorsement of Moreland and Brodsky, who to me were suspect qualified state attorneys, and Brodsky is the sitting state attorney right now.
Well, we have our guest on the line, and he is a man of many accomplishments. He is the author of Ruthless Ambition, The Rise and Fall of Chris Christie. He is Louis Manzo. You can find out more about the book at ruthlessambition.com. His previous work is God's Earth Also Cries, a novel based on chromium contamination in the 1980s. He served as chief of the Department of Health for Jersey City, New Jersey, exposed corporate greed and unscrupulous company trying to cover up chromium contamination, hence the book. He also served as a New Jersey State Assemblyman. He assisted in sponsorship of the largest property tax rebate in state's history. You should like that, Augie. As well as some of the toughest anti-gang and gun violence laws in recent history. He was falsely accused of taking bribes, arrested, and taken to jail in the Big Rig 3 sting. Later, a federal district court tossed out the charges, and he has spent 5 years since researching how prosecutors used the inquiry to profit themselves and Governor Christie's 2009 gubernatorial bid. Here on The Morning Edge, we welcome Louis Manzo. Good morning.
Morning,
Louis. Good morning. Thank you, Hank, and thank you, Augie.
There you go. Chris Christie has always unimpressed me with his humanity and/or the lack of it, or impressed me with the lack of it, I should say. And I've seen him in when he's been threatened with real debate from the floor from an ordinary folk. He has the art of the put down up to a point, and then he doesn't care anymore. That's my impression of him, but person to person. But some of the things he has done, you can probably speak to, and my general opinion, he's been more to damage infrastructure, the ability of the people to function long term and in the future. That is my initial editorial comment.
Well, you hit it right on the head, and that's just for starters. That's just the tip of the iceberg. I didn't know the guy in depth until I began researching him to do my book, and it's astonishing that this man is in a position to possibly win a Republican nomination and become possibly the next president of the United States based upon how he got where he got.
Well, you know, in 1980, I stood up on local television in Illinois and spoke out against Ronald Reagan for similar reasons, because I knew what Reagan had done to California and how he had converted from a reputable to a disreputable state after he left. and warned people about it. At that time, I was a registered Republican, and I felt that the man was going to do damage, and that George Bush Sr. last told the truth when he referred to Reagan's economics as voodoo. And so here we have a man in Christie who has the underlying malice against government that I think showed itself in the Big Dig and some other things.
You're absolutely right. And if people only have to look at the fiscal condition of the state of New Jersey, which is in the worst fiscal condition of any state in the union right now because of decisions under Christie's stewardship. His hindsight, his foresight, in not being able to see future needs of our state has resulted in him canceling very worthwhile employment and transportation projects, which could have benefited New Jersey's unemployed, benefited our commuters, and would have landed him landed the state tons of money in federal aid, just to get even or with political or to settle political scores. Christie has chosen the path of being an obstructionist. And yet, when he goes outside of New Jersey, he's able to spin this tale of him being a very successful governor and tells a story of New Jersey which is non-existent, exists only in his head.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with Louis Manzo. He is the author of Ruthless Ambition. You can get to the website at ruthlessambitionthebook.com. You know, this starts with Chris Christie and something called Bid Rig. In 2002. Now, for us down in Florida that aren't transplants from New Jersey, I guess this caused his rise to prominence. Plus, it somehow connects you into this storyline, too. What is Bid Rig?
Bid Rig was a series of federal stings that Christie initiated and rose to fame on. They were mainly against politicians in New Jersey, and they were political corruption stings. He used confidential informants to root out corruption. The problem is that when he did Bid Rig 3, put it in place a few months before the gubernatorial election in 2009, which he won, he used a compromised confidential informant, and he used prosecutors who, unbeknownst to everyone until after the election, were contributing to his campaign and whom he was negotiating jobs with in his administration should he win the election. These were the guys who brought false charges against many of the people who were scooped up and arrested in that July 2009 sting. However, the sting resulted in buoying Christie to the lead in the gubernatorial race. He gathered a 15-point lead at that point. He made public corruption the main issue in the campaign, and political scientists, the press, everyone attribute that sting to his victory. As the late Senator Frank Lautenberg said and accused him, Christie went so far as to bring political campaign objectives into the planning of law enforcement actions and was actually conducting a political campaign within the office of a United States attorney. Frightening.
He's always got an agenda that ends up being political. He's a maneuverer, he's historically. The thing that's interesting about him is in the Port Authority, who was the fellow there that may be taking the hit for him on the whole Bridgegate issue?
Well, that was one of the architects of his campaign, a former State Attorney General, David Sampson,
right,
who he appointed as the chairman there. And, you know, the stories which we cover in the book about how he used his office in the Port Authority to actually bully and threaten mayors to take care of his clients and his law firm at the risk of forfeiting aid to their municipalities from the federal government through the Port Authority for Sandy funding, you know, for the storm that hit up here. It's just astonishing.
Well, the thing with the Bridgegate, there was an area along the waterfront, I believe, that was being held up for development, and there was an adjoining community that with a mayor that opposed him, and criticized him. And of course, if you did that with Christie, you paid a price, and he went after her. What was that about?
Yeah, well, there were two mayors. The first mayor I alluded to already, David Sampson, when he after the mayor of Hoboken for development, held up funds to her town until she decided to agree to greenlight a development for one of his law firm's clients. The initial one, Bridgegate, which took the nation by storm, really, was the mayor of Fort Lee, Mark Sokolovich, Fort Lee sits at the western end of the George Washington Bridge, and basically they were pressuring this mayor to endorse Christie. They wanted an endorsement from a Democratic mayor in the gubernatorial reelection campaign of his. He held out, and basically they shut down the lane entrances to the George Washington Bridge, which emanate out of Fort Lee, virtually gridlocking his town for 4 days, and gridlocking basically all the traffic trying to get into or onto the bridge and into New York for 4 days. And that's the, that investigation is still ongoing.
Is that going to, is there a likelihood or possibility or a non-possibility of indictment out of this, and who will be indicted?
They'll go after the low-lying fruit. I explain in the book why the U.S. Attorney's Office will do nothing against Christie, mainly because he has still some of his emissaries there. And basically, as the research shows, these guys don't eat their own. They're very protective of themselves within the offices of U.S. attorneys, as was shown in the U.S. attorney scandal during the 2000s. These guys get a slap on the wrist, that's it, and they protect themselves. There's no Democrats and Republicans in these offices. There's just U.S. attorneys, and it's a brotherhood unto themselves.
So if somebody decides to turn on Chris, they're going to protect him from that. Is that what you're
saying?
That's
exactly right. They'll insulate him.
Yeah. Okay. So then so he's going to let... is there any hope that the time will stretch long enough to deny him any chance of making a comeback to run for president?
Well, I'm a firm believer that before he gets that far along, that opposition to him, people running in his own party against him, are going to start to see the stuff that we researched and did in our book. It's basically a vetting of him, and the party's really going to have to, at that point, ask themselves the question, can we risk putting up a candidate with this many problems, and I'm talking about corruption problems in his background, which could come home to roost in a national election. It's like a bomb that's waiting to explode, and we don't know when it's going to explode, but it's going to.
Would someone like Sampson take the big hit and be indicted, and that would be too dangerous for Christie to proceed? There'd be that threat?
Well, that's exactly it, because for Sampson, even if Sampson were to take the hit for him, it's going to be quite hard for anyone to swallow the fact that this architect of Christie's campaign, one of his key advisors, wasn't informing him or working hand in hand with him to accomplish the things. Remember, Sampson could threaten the mayor of Hoboken with not receiving the funding, but only the governor of New Jersey could not deliver the funding, which he did not. Mm-hmm. So it takes, anything that Sampson says, even if he takes the whole blame, it's going to be hard to swallow that Christie didn't have a hand in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got to be walking on eggs at this time with this possibility hanging out there. So the time stretch, the longer the clock ticks, the worse it is for Christie, is what you're suggesting.
Yes, I mean, and you got to understand the psyche of Christie, which I also explain in the book. When he puts something in his mind, as untrue as it might be, he starts to believe it as being the truth, and he starts preaching it as the truth. So in his mind, he didn't do anything wrong in Bridgegate. New Jersey is whistling along, humming along. We have a great economy. Everything's going great because that's what's in his mind.
So he's his own true believer.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Chris Christie's an interesting character, and between him and Perry, I mean, I'm really baffled what the Republicans are going to do in this whole situation, and it looks like Rand Paul will be the chief beneficiary ultimately.
I believe that that two things, there's only two things right now in this situation. If the field remains the same of the existing, you know, aspirants, even though some of them haven't declared yet, I believe Christie will win this field mainly because he has a lot of chits that he has laid out there, being the chairman of the Republican Governors Association, and has been able to campaign and help other candidates get elected around the country. The only crippling thing that could happen to him would be two people entering the race, one being Jeb Bush and the other being Mitt Romney. If either of those two enter the race, then Christie's candidacy will crumble.
Oh, really? That's an interesting.
Yes.
You're suggesting you think that Romney still could come back?
Yes, I am, because most of Christie's supporters, financial supporters, are from that Romney, from the Romney camp. There was a lot of hard feelings after the way Christie nicked up Romney at the end, you know, at the end of October, early November of his election run. We go into that in the book. Those financial people are over there, but they've told Christie that if Romney gets in, they're moving out and moving over to him. So Romney remains the biggest threat to him, and naturally the Bush name just brings an aura into itself that'll galvanize
let's pick up on raising
over to him if he decided to get into it.
Let's pick up on that, since we're in Florida and we're well acquainted with Jeb Bush. How do you handicap Jeb Bush in that manner? Because there doesn't seem to be much affection for him in what will be the Republican primary voter base.
Well, remember, just as these candidates move forward, if you remember the last round of debates that began for the Republican Party, where Herman Cain and all these guys were going at it with each other, it became very ugly, and a lot of people became dissatisfied with those candidates. As a matter of fact, Christie was toying with possibly getting into that race because of the dissatisfaction with the amount of candidates, because the debates got so negative. Bush has probably done his homework on that and saying, you know, if I'm going to run, I have the advantage of not getting into this until late. So let these guys go at one another. Let's see how satisfied the public is with those guys. And if they're not, I'm just going to throw my name in, because he's the only guy who could sit on the sidelines, because he could raise money, you know, at the drop of a hat. He has the name recognition already, the family does. So that's his advantage. It's more advantageous to stay out of it as long as you can without getting into it, because the minute you declare and are in the fray, you're a target for other candidates.
Yeah, but eventually he has to face the voters in the primary, and in the Republican primaries, they are just adamantly opposed to his comments and stand on immigration and on Common Core and the real red meat issues there.
I agree with you there, but again, it becomes a thing of electability, and it becomes a thing of the Republican establishment moving it along. Naturally, the Tea Party is going to be opposed, and it's going to be interesting to see if the Tea Party splinters away and galvanizes around their candidate, and you have a real split, which means that you'll have a ultra-conservative candidate rising to the top, as well as an establishment candidate. The rest of the field gets cleared out, and these two guys go primary state to primary state against each other. That does take in your point, but the main thing is that these guys don't damage themselves prior to that, prior to Iowa and prior to New Hampshire.
So
that's what happened to most of that field the last time.
So you're saying Romney and Bush are both sitting back, knowing where the cards are really going to fall in terms of the money, you don't think the Rand Paul issue is a factor, or that the Tea Party will get behind him and or some moderates and even some Democrats who believe in the libertarian approach?
Yes, I believe that the voting base, yes, the conservative voting base comes out, and they could make it a two-man race down to the wire between a Rand Paul, who galvanizes all the conservative strength in the party, but the other guys who were what you would call establishment Republicans, who are more moderate, you know, the Christies, possibly the Perrys, these the Bush and Romney, Christie, Perry, they'll all fade. It'll either be Romney or Bush standing up, and it'll be they'll be left to fend off Rand Paul and the party. Either the solid conservative voting base of the Republicans will bring Rand to victory, or the money will bring either Bush or Romney to victory.
Yeah, that seems the likelihood. It's you know, there's always a sneaking hunch that Romney will come back despite all the protestations. And the same thing is true in the Bush family with respect to Jeb.
Yeah. It's a free ride, Augie, for them. You know, why get into it when you don't have to? You could sit on the fence, you know, choose to issue statements when you can. He gets a chance to maybe massage some of the problems he has right now so that when he presents himself as a candidate, if it happens, that he's more amenable to the party.
Well, right now, the Democrats are putting out the little feelers regarding Biden that he's considering running, and this is going to push the party one way or the other, and probably to the left. So Hillary will have that choice only and wait till the last minute. Of course, I've long held that what Hillary's card playing will be, she's going to go to Medicare for all or some version of that.
I agree with you there, and she has the best weapon in her arsenal, and that's actually Bill Clinton. So.
Oh, what a! if we did not have the 22nd Amendment, we would have a pretty decent system, and Bill never would have been defeated.
Yes. By the way, on the opposite side, Christie, as good as Bill Clinton was in delivering and being able to convey a message, Christie is almost the same type, only the problem with Christie is he invents a message, but he can deliver, and he has a persona that's chillingly Clinton-esque.
We're speaking with Louis Manzo. He is the author of Ruthless Ambition, The Rise and Fall of Chris Christie. The website is ruthlessambitionthebook.com. There are excerpts that you can read there on the site, both the foreword and chapter one. There's interviews from the author, and as well as blog postings and a way to order the book. That's ruthlessambitionthebook.com. It'll also be linked to on our podcast site at themorningedge.podomatic.com. Mr. Manzo, we only have about a minute or two left. What would you like to leave the audience with?
Well, the fact that is, before they go out and vote for any candidates, one thing that I point out in the book is that we failed at drastically in this country is we don't vet them enough. We rely on 30-second campaign commercials that we see on TV. You really need to get to the bottom of it and explore who you're going to vote for, especially with what's going on in this world today, and especially the fact that that leadership can change and affect your life immensely. Understand who you're voting for. Do your due diligence. And this book that I wrote is a clear vetting of at least one of the candidates that are out there asking for your support.
I really want you back, Mr. Manzo. This is a fascinating subject. It's not quite up to JFK, but it's there.
I'd love to come back any time.
Well, neither is
the opportunity. You guys.
Chris Christie isn't up to JFK either. So
that's for sure. He's no JFK.
All right, Mr. Manzo, again, the book is Ruthless Ambition. You can find out more at ruthlessambitionthebook.com. Is your other book also available on that website?
It might have sold out. I believe they're going to put more out. It's available at it was available on Amazon.com. It's a pretty good read about cancer clusters and how they evolve in the country and the politics behind them. Frightening also.
Yeah, it's called God's Earth Also Cries. Just check Louis Manzo on the Amazon author list, and I'm sure you'll find links there. Again, Mr. Manzo, thank you so much for joining us on The Morning Edge.
Thank you, Louis.
Thank you again, guys.
All right. Yeah. Well, before we get too far away from it, I found this little medley of Chris Christie's greatest hits.
I love when people say they don't want to have argument. That's what we were sent here for. Your rear end's going to get thrown in jail, idiot. I have no interest in answering your question.
get the hell off the beach.
You know, your definition recently of compromise is everybody agree with what the president wants, mm-hmm. so we can compromise.
Did I say on topic? Are you stupid?
I could say it really nicely. I could say it in the way that you all might be more comfortable with. You know, maybe we could go back to the last administration where I could say it in the way you wouldn't even understand it.
You know, some may go down tonight, but it ain't going to be jobs, sweetheart.
If you decide what you want to do is put on a show today, let me tell you something. I can go back and forth with you as much as you want.
This is who I am, and this is who the people elected.
Well, there you go. A man of few words.
I don't know about that. But
a few words of kindness, of interaction, of fairness in conversation, a bully by any other stretch. And
A couple quick things I just want to try and slide in here in the last, because, of course, everybody listens to The Morning Edge to find out what the rest of the media is not telling them. By the way, go back and check the Dennis Mailey interview from Monday, even though it focused on the election. We talk about the Seymour Hersh article and the false flag
what is that,
gas attack.
The false flag, what is that? Define that.
Well, that is when you stage an attack and put the blame on someone else to achieve your ends, usually to direct aggression and retribution against the person you put the blame on. In the case of Syria, it's stated as fact over and over and over again that President Assad gassed his own people. And Seymour Hersh puts out quite a case, and it's not the only person to do it, but the most extensive case, in the London Review of Books. I didn't see any coverage of that here.
Nothing.
That Turkey was behind the attack using the rebels in Syria to launch the false flag attack to force Obama's hand into bombing Syria. But we'll talk about that more later. I just wanted to say that Dennis exchanged some comments with me about it. He's read the article, finds it fascinating, too. We can talk about that more. But what I wanted to get to, because if you listen to The Morning Edge, you knew about the false flag allegations before. Barzani, the president of Iraqi Kurdish Republic, disclosed Tuesday Iran had begun sending weapons to the Kurdish Peshmerga to fight Islamist encroachments. Iranians.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Zarif stood beside Barzani in Erbil when he made the announcement. I didn't see too much about that on MSNBC.
Well, you do know that we're coming up into November. There's going to be the final nuclear decision, if you will, or result that's going to put us closer, the U.S. and Iran, together with joint interest. And that's about to happen.
If you've been listening to The Morning Edge, you've heard months ago when we said we were going to get together with our good allies, the Iranians,
and that is the best thing we could ever do, believe it or not.
And here we have the Iranians arming the Kurds that we're debating sending more weaponry to. Also, Egypt and United Arab Emirates conducted airstrikes against Tripoli without informing Washington, according to our sources.
Golly gee whiz.
All right, so we will be back on Friday with another Morning Edge. I don't even know what we're doing for Labor Day, Augie.
We're laboring.
I guess you'll have to tune in Friday to find out what the plans for Labor Day are. And we will be back, well, Friday, at least, with another Morning Edge.
There you go.